Gera can hit them. Did! Oh, what a goal by Zoltan Gera! And still Baptista, yes! It's Kabay! It's fantastic!
One from David Villa. Oh, great finish!
He's done just that, he scored! Juninho's done it!
Kubu making another glimpse of goal here!
Hello and welcome to the Streets Won't Forget podcast. I'm your host, Dan Mountney, and as always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-hosts. Two men who are working on their latest football film called 12 Affairs and a Full Kit, The John Terry Story. It's Ben Woolley and Harry Martinez.
What studio is going to be brave enough to greenlight this?
Almost a bigger mystery. It's almost bigger mystery than the Princess of Wales right now.
Oh, we can't talk about this. It's been a kill notice. Not for her.
Was she wearing shin pads in that photo? Who knows? I feel like, you know, you see like film premieres and people rock up in like really random outfits. I feel like Harry had turned up to the premiere of his own film in a full kit with shin pads and boots on.
Yeah, mate, just you never know when to expect the two-footer from Francis Coquelin, mate. You never know.
You do know. Are you turning up in a personalized shirt or are you going for a player?
No, I can't wear a player's shirt. I'm not them. Can't show up to my own film in someone else's shirt.
Are you going to be the guy with the personalized shirt? Oh, yeah. On the red carpet? Ooh.
I'd have to be.
Oh, please make it a goalkeeper kit as well.
It'd be a pro clubs kit.
Well, I don't think John Terry's going to be winning Andy Cas of the Week unless Harry's got something to tell us that nobody else knows. But Harry, who is your Andy Carroll of the Week winner?
Yeah, breaking news. John Terry is... My winner this week, I think this is truly the spirit of a Geordie, as we've seen many a time before. Yeah, right. it goes to the Lecce manager or former manager, Roberto Diaversa, because they've sacked him after he headbutted Verona striker. And this is a name I didn't think I'd hear in a Serie A, Thomas Henry.
Do you know what the funny part is? He's French. Yeah. Thomas Henry.
I was going to say, like, I didn't think he'd be... English, but yeah, so it goes to him after a wonderful headbutt that happened after the game. It's not even during the game. He goes up to him after the game and just absolutely nuts him in the chest.
That's a hater for real.
I love it. Yeah.
Based.
Stick one on him after the game. Let him know he's just had a game.
Let him know he's in a game.
There's so many moments where you've seen a manager that he clearly wants to lamp someone in the game. Fair play to this guy for following through with it.
Yeah. We don't condone violence, but on a football
it is funny.
Yeah.
Fantastic. A worthy winner. I could see Andy Carroll becoming a manager and headbutting an opposition
Well,
player.
We've seen him many a time associated with Newcastle. Was it Alan Pardew who headbutted someone? David Miler, that was it, yeah.
Tyneside fans aren't afraid of headbutting horses either, so...
That's true.
This is true. It's a very Geordie thing, a headbutt, but there you go. Wonderful. Question time, boys, and I believe, Mr. Woolley, you have the question for us this week. What have you got?
Welcome to Question Time.
I do, and I was actually once asked a similar question to this in a job interview, which kind of spurred the thought in my mind.
Okay. Who's the best centre-back in Premier League history?
Yeah, they didn't like my answer, I didn't get a job. If you had to be stuck on a desert island with one player, geez, past or present, who would it be and why?
I think it depends how you want to look at it. If you want to get good at the game and you're on a beach, I'd go with Berbatov because I think he'd probably train me on the best at beach volleyball, right, kind of vibe.
So you're thinking, like, if I'm stuck here, I may as well make the most of it.
Yeah, either that or any Brazilian from the last 40 years.
Okay.
Beach, I'm going to go the opposite way. I know for a fact that Frank Lampard has an incredibly high IQ, like a ridiculously high IQ. He's going to get me off that desert island.
Luis Suarez also invited.
No. If you're stuck on a desert island with Luis Suarez, he's eating you alive.
Yeah,
you are his meal.
Not even, you weren't even going to run out of food yet. He just wanted to do it.
You are a Uruguayan barbecue. You are like barbacoa beef by the end of the day, mate.
Cover me in chimichurri, get me on the fire. Yeah, yes. Probably. I'll be medium rare.
Where's the avocados and lime?
Yeah, Frank Lampard, he'll get me off at Ireland.
He's having me with that.
He'll bore me to death.
See, I went a slightly different way in my thinking. I'm going for Paul Pogba.
Because he's got nothing else to do for the next 4 years.
No.
Voodoo?
Because Graham Souness will be so annoyed he doesn't know what Pogba's doing and can't complain about it. He will track us down within hours and will be saved.
Yeah. Will he save you or will he kill you?
He can do what he wants to Paul. I'm getting on his boat and leaving.
Graham Souness is renowned for being quite an angry man.
He is.
He's going to turn up on that island and plant a Galatasaray flag in the middle of the island and then leave.
Yeah.
And Harry's mum will be fuming. Big Galatasaray.
She's got the flares out.
That's a throwback.
Oh, man. Maybe that's who we want to be stuck with, because she'll fire the flares or get us rescued.
God love her. Got a chest infection at the moment. She'd still be there with her flares.
Get well soon, Harry's mum.
Go on, truly a touching tribute, this.
It is, yeah. I've noticed a theme in the past few weeks. It's that when we do this kind of intro segment, Harry always has something to tell us, and it starts with, I've been trawling social media this week.
Yeah.
So what have you found this week,
my
friend?
That's my second part. My first part is, have you seen... We all have our feelings about the MLS, don't we?
Yes.
And we all have our feelings about how tin pot that league is, and you know, it's a bit of a facade, really. It kind of gives me that vibe of they feel like they're always on a TV show. It's just really annoying. But
it's
anyway,
like the game itself isn't exciting enough, so they're like, we need to make it seem more over the top.
Yeah, it's horrid, basically. And I found something that really condemns them yet again. And that is, did you see over the yesterday that Matty Longstaff made his debut for Toronto?
What the f*** is Matty Longstaff doing in the MLS?
Hey, not only that, but he assisted the winner in the 80th minute.
With Sean Longstaff.
Yeah, mate,
you say he assisted William?
No, he assisted the winner, which was an assist to none other than Lorenzo Insigne. So that I thought was pretty cool. Then I zoomed in on a picture of Matty Longstaff on his debut after I saw a tweet about this. And in the MLS, when you make your debut, above the little badge where it says the Adidas or little Nike or whatever that tick would be, it has a little stitching that says debut. So you have to wear it. It says debut on your shirt.
It's like something. It's my first day at school. This is my name sticker.
Isn't that horrendous?
Is awful.
You know what happened? Hi, my name is Matty. I've just joined Toronto on it.
You know what happened if you wore that in the UK? You're getting two-footed by everyone on the pitch. They're zeroing in on that.
The abuse from the fans.
Cruise missile.
The abuse from the fans was like, oh, 2-0 on your big day out.
I think we should get that for every player. We'll get something stitched above every player's logo on their shirts. Like for Lukaku, we could have...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And... Well, my second
fans
part of
decide what goes on your shirt before the game.
Yeah, my second part to this is actually I trawl through social media, and it's my Instagram reels this time. Like we're varying up the sources.
Well, this could be anything.
And this is have you ever heard the stories of when Thomas Gravesen was at Everton?
I've heard the ones that are allowed to be made public.
Yeah. So the first one is that apparently when Tommy Gravesen was at Everton, he was dating a really famous porn star. And all of the boys, as any football team do, were ribbing him saying, oh, Tommy, where's your... Can I get some pictures of your missus? And Tommy, who adopted the Scouse language and called everyone lad, apparently, turned around to him and said...
language.
he said, oh, lad, just search him on Google. And he said that to everyone there.
You've got to back yourself in that situation, don't you? Like, you can't shy away from it.
The second one, apparently, during pre-season, that little break from season to pre-season, he used to go back and stay in an attic, just a little attic with, like, a bed and TV and stuff, for 6 months. He'd just stay in there, like, no one came in or anything. It was, like, a tiny room, and he'd just be there for, like, ages. And apparently during this time, all he'd do is he'd sit on his PlayStation. At one point, he was on the Challenger series for Call of Duty, and he was playing league stuff and was up like number two on scoreboards and stuff.
Can you imagine you're sitting there at uni, bored out of your mind? You're like, oh, who's this guy that's just killing me on the other team? It's Thomas Graveson.
Tommy Graveson. Yeah, of all the people, you're playing against the centre midfielder for Everton.
who's winning in a 1v1 on Russ? Thomas Graveson or Gabby Jesus?
Oh, it's got to be Tommy Graveson. He's got the vintage look about him.
Yeah, Jesus is a CSGO player, mate. He's all about accuracy. He's not about spraying and praying.
Exactly. Okay. Another example of this podcast answering football's immortal question.
the last one I'll give you about him is apparently when he was on the pitch and he was about to shoot and someone was wide open in space and they go, Tommy, Tommy, Tommy. Apparently if he shot and missed, he'd turn around and he'd say, don't shout at the shooter, lad. Which is unbelievable because it's like, you're putting me off, that's why I've missed.
He is embodying the phrase, the game's the game, really, isn't he?
Poor guy. The game is indeed the game.
The game's the game, mate.
Fantastic. That was a wonderful example of your week on social media, Harry. Enjoy that.
You, mate.
Well, we gave a little kind of hint in the intro as to what this week is going to be about. And we're talking about films and TV series and football's involvement in these. Now, footballers often grace the big and small screens with quite varying results. There have been some absolute classics, but there have been plenty of rotters as well. And we're going to talk about both sides. But I wanted to start with kind of the beginning of the football series being a thing. So obviously we've got All or Nothing on Amazon now. They've obviously had Tottenham, Man City, Arsenal.
Yeah.
You've got other such series like that, Sunderland Till I Die on Netflix. But back in the 90s is when they truly began, and there's three ones of absolute vintage that I wanted to kind of give you some quotes from to give you an idea of what they're all about without watching them. So, in the 90s, a documentary crew goes to Peterborough United, where Barry Fry has just taken over as manager. The documentary is called There's Only One Barry Fry. Now, there's some wonderful excerpts from this. The first one is on January deadline day, they get into Barry's office and he's in there talking to a player, a striker who he believes is going to keep Peterborough in the league. They're on the verge of relegation. He seals the deal and the first thing he does is he picks up a gavel and he bangs it on the table and he announces, sold to the fat bastard in the blue blazer. Now, you would not get that on All or Nothing. Can you imagine Pep Guardiola, bang, sold to the baldy in the blue blazer? There's some other wonderful scenes where we go to Barry's house and there's a point where he opens up a cupboard in his kitchen. And you know, you see in like pizza restaurants, they have the massive cans of tomatoes. I promise you, he opens up a cupboard and there is an entire cupboard filled with those. There must be about 20 to 25 tins in this cupboard. Who's keeping that many tomatoes? Why?
I love the fact you picked that out. On top of everything, you picked out.
It's the little things, my friend. It's the little things. Or the big things, like it's tins of tomatoes. And there's another wonderful scene.
That's such a Mark Corrigan thing to do, mate.
There's another wonderful scene where they get access to Barry's life that is unprecedented because they get into the bedroom where he's with his wife.
What?
And they're laying in bed before they go to sleep. And Barry's clearly a bit stressed. He's talking about the problems he's having. The light goes out.
Well, it's problems he's having in football.
Yes.
Whilst his missus is in bed next to him.
We'll get to the missus in a second. The light goes out. The picture obviously goes black. And then from the darkness, you hear Barry go, fancy a bit, love.
You know, Harry, you touched on it there. It's got to be dire sometimes being the wife or husband of lower league manager.
Imagine being Neil Warnock's wife right now.
Yeah, and you sit there, he's like, if he talks about one more centre half, I'm going to divorce him.
Like, think of where you've had to move in the last 10 years alone. She's had to move from Cardiff to Huddersfield to, like, where did he go next?
Well, imagine being Carlo Ancelotti's wife. You've gone from Madrid to Liverpool.
Yeah, but then back to Madrid.
Yeah.
This is Paris.
That's true.
Well, another documentary from 1995 is Leyton Orient Club for a Fiver, and it's basically about Leyton Orient's season after they get bought for a fiver. And the manager, John Sitton, goes on the single best half-time rant I've ever heard.
So you little cunt, when I tell you to do something, and you fucking big cunt, when I tell you to do something, do it. And if you come back at me, we'll have a fucking right sort out here. All right? And you can pair up if you like, and you can fucking pick someone else to help you, and you can bring your fucking dinner. Because by the time I'm finished with you, you'll fucking need it.
Oh, man.
You can bring your dinner.
It's such a random line. I love the way he starts with your little your big
orders of magnitude of increasing as he gets through the quote. Fantastic.
Like people rave about how good these fly on the wall football documentaries are now. The 90s ones are so much better because it's completely unfiltered. Like there's no way Amazon would air Pep saying anything like that.
To be fair, we have had some classics in the recent years though.
Oh, we have. But the closest we get now is like Jose. We're back in the 90s. Yeah. That like anything goes.
Yeah.
Well, one final one before we move on to the classics is Chester City, the American Dream. I don't know if you know the story, but it's bizarre. So in 1999, the club is in administration and they get bought by an American named Terry Smith, who is an American football coach and decides to make himself the manager. Now, obviously, he's absolutely clueless, and they are horrific. They are awful. At one point in the documentary, he resigns as manager. He's obviously still owner. They hire another manager, but he still sits in the dugout. There's one point during his time as manager before a game, and this is a wonderful line. He said, "We're going downhill first half. We need to get 3 goals." I don't think I've ever heard a manager specify the amount of goals they want in a single half. And how big is the hill? How big of an advantage is this slope?
Honestly, it's awkward when he finds out they're actually 4-0 down at half time.
There's also another point where he says, "I don't like the view from the touchline." And then it pans to him standing on top of the roof of the clubhouse watching the game.
Oh, but we could get like a real life scaled down version of this with Chelsea if Bowley gets the man he wants.
Todd Bowley standing on top of the, you know, there's the hotel you can see above the stand. Todd Bowley's on top of the hotel
because he wants the basketball coach.
He wants Steve Kerr, didn't he?
Yeah, to come and have the Ted Lasso effect. I'm like,
it
please,
would be so funny.
Right on the wall documentary of this,
please. Like, what do we do if he succeeds?
Honestly, game's gone.
If
cancel
they get
football.
Steve Kerr as manager, I'm contacting Chelsea straight away and we are going to go and film a documentary.
Yeah.
We're going to make our money, boys.
Where he talks to like the 16-year-old lads from London. And he's like, "Yeah, come on, boys. You know, we got great game this week." I'm like, "F off, bro."
Yeah.
Well, that was our trip down 90s documentary memory lane. We've got plenty more to talk about.
Well, I think in recent times, the most classic one, apart from a Sunderland Till I Die moment, it's got to be that moment where Danny Rose is sat with Jose Mourinho.
Oh, yes. Oh,
I mean, it is. It's even funnier the longer this goes on of him thinking he joins AC Milan because his career has gone so chaotically downhill at the moment that every year it gets funnier.
The not AC Milan then quote will live on in memory for years to come. Glorious television, that.
Unbelievable moment.
There are some golden moments in the office with Jose, especially when he first gets appointed. You see him sat in the office and he's got Sky Sports News on and they're talking about him and they're being quite disparaging. And he stands up, turns the team off and just says, "F off."
The All or Nothing series is great. Like the Man City one is an incredible look at like football, like in a window into Pep's mind, how to run a really successful team. The ones where the teams win ball are absolute box office. Like the Spurs implosion, Arteta getting out a light bulb in the middle of the dressing room and being like, "Thomas Edison, guys," memes that will live on forever.
How many times do I say to you, Ben, you are the best in the world?
You are the best in the world, Ben.
My mental health is impeccable because of that line alone. And the fact that every time you see Edu, he's behind a grill in that series. He's in the office once. The rest of them, he's grilling.
It's the Anfield one where he gets the speakers out and then gets smacked 3-0.
The other moment from that series that sticks in my head is when they're in the canteen and Albert Samuel Conger is moaning about not playing. And Eddie Nketiah turns to him and says, "You think you're the only one not playing?"
Oh, man. Like, shot down. You don't recover from that. Put in a transfer request.
You are right. The ones, the City one's good, but the like you know what's going to happen. It's going to be successful. The ones where there's complete and utter failure are incredible.
It's what makes Sunderland Till I Die so good, is you know they don't go up. And every time you're watching the show, everyone's like, yeah, this is it. This is the one. Get the EDM in the stadium.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, it's all going to come crashing down.
The moment when they don't win the... is it the FA Trophy? The Papa John's. Yeah. I think it's Papa John's at the time, though.
It's always the Johnston Paint Trophy to me.
Yeah, the JPT's elite.
You can call it the Bristol Motors Trophy all you want.
But they get to the final of that and lose it, and that is top telly.
They go to Wembley twice in one episode and lose both games.
Yeah, it's
that's fucking impeccable.
That's the one.
It's
so good. The thing is, it's such good TV, I actually feel bad for them. Normally you're like, ha-ha, this is hilarious. Watching that, I'm like, I kind of just want them to go up. And then they get to the Dosser going, get EDM on, lad, and it's gone again.
When Chris Coleman nearly has a fight with those kids outside the stadium, that is
the guy who's threatening him. He goes, I've got a wife and kid. Like, what's that got to do with this, Chris?
My man's standing on business.
Part of the favourite scene that I think often goes forgotten, and in a documentary, the use of a cut is a wonderful mechanism to convey drama. But in football documentaries, they're used for moments of utter hilarity. And one of my favourite ones is when Josh Madger, who's obviously their top scorer, I think it's halfway through the season, there's talk about him leaving. And there's a clip of them in a children's hospital of all places. And some sickly child says to him, "You're going to stay, Josh, aren't you?" And he says, "Yeah, I'm going to stay. I promise I'll stay." And then it cuts to Sky Sports News. Josh Madger requests transfer from Sunderland.
Yeah, wasn't it Josh Madger signs for Bordeaux or something like that?
Yeah. Oh man.
Is Sunderland Till I Die the best football documentary?
It is.
It's got to be. Like, the All or Nothing ones are good, but the big clubs I feel are less interesting. It's more of like what an interesting look behind the curtain. Sunderland are rotting down in the doldrums of League One.
Apparently the Wrexham one's good. I've not watched it, but
I've watched the first series, and it is sprinkled with Americanisms. There's an entire episode where they explain to American people what Wales and Wrexham is, and it is the single worst piece of television I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah,
there was one from a few years ago as well on Juventus. And I tried to watch
that was
it.
Awful.
I think I told you about
that was
this
awful.
One. I tried to watch it, and I had to turn it off because the guy narrating it was
It was awful. It was so bad.
But the Sunderland one, I think, is good, because it's that mix of it's interesting about football, but it's just like a human story as well. Oh, like, the heartbreak, the hope, the emotion.
That line of, why am I seeing Ibrahimovic at the bottom of this list? It's just unbelievable.
The other good part about that is that things like All or Nothing are obviously made by a big production company, whereas the Sunderland one is made by, I think it's two or three Sunderland fans, and take the piss out of their own football club. Yeah, it's Sunderland fans who make it.
That's
and I like
so
it
good.
That they talk to the fans as well in the show. Like, it gives you that grounding perspective. Whereas you watch like the City one and it's all like glitz and glamour, and it's not like some bloke from the northeast who works in a factory.
Have you watched the new one, Dan?
No, I've been holding off on watching
saving it.
I'm waiting for the right moment to sit down and watch the whole thing. I don't want to watch it in little spurts. I want to experience the Sunderland as
a whole. My missus is on holiday Saturday. I've got a week. I'm just gonna smash out in a day.
I did actually watch a football documentary the other week about Brian Clough. And we're going to talk a bit more about Brian Clough in an upcoming Mavericks episode, because I think we can all agree that Brian Clough was a bit of a maverick. But there was an absolutely hilarious scene where they cut to an interview, and it was just after he'd been sacked by Leeds. I think he was there 55 days. And the context is he'd replaced Don Revie at Leeds, who was his big rival. So ITV get them both on to do an interview at the same time. And Clough is obviously the one who's just been sacked, should be on the defensive. And he turns it completely on his head. And there's a point where he's talking to Dom Revy and he says, "Do you understand, young man? Do you understand?" And Dom Revy goes, "Yes." And then he just goes, "Good lad." This is a man who's just lost his job. Good lad.
Speaking of Brian Clough and that Leeds spell, that leads us on quite nicely. So say there's more than just TV when it comes to football. There's been a range of films. I feel like there's two ways they do it. You've either got to play it like off as a laugh and it's all a bit of fun, and football's like the mechanism to just have a bit of a joke. Or you play it more straight and you play it in that, like, you can't help but be romantic about football. That, like, the emotion and the passion and all of this. And one of the films that does this really well is The Damned United, that focuses on Brian Clough's lead spell. It dramatizes it a little bit, like some of it is fictitious. But in terms of an actual footballing drama, I think it's the best serious football film that's been made. Michael Sheen in it is fantastic. If you haven't seen it, it's probably worth a watch.
He nails the Brian Clough accent. Good lad.
He does.
He does sound like he's like an iota away from being Wallace from Wallace and Gromit.
The funny part about that film is that they talked about it in the documentary I watched. It was an old documentary that was released just before the film came out. And the film was obviously based on a book, and his family sued the author of the book.
Because he made up
a load of stuff. And they had to massively change the film to obviously please the family. But Brian Clough was a bit of a controversial character, but a wonderful character in the game. I think to defame him in that way in the book was horrific. And obviously he's dead at that point. He can't respond to it.
The book's a bit dodgy.
Yeah, the film went about it in a really nice way, and it was good theatre as well. You know, it had that drama, but not to the point where they were accusing Brian Clough of things that he didn't do. The other football film I absolutely love, and I know you're going to agree with me here, Ben, is Escape to Victory.
Oh, yes. It's so stupid.
It's stupidly brilliant. The fact that they used, for the footballers, it was the Ipswich Town squad from some point in the 70s.
Yeah.
They've got Pelé, who for some reason is a prisoner of war. Not sure how that works, being Brazilian. The goalkeeper is Sylvester Stallone.
It was so bad at the game of football that they had to film him for so long because of how he was.
Really?
Yeah. He was apparently so bad at football that it took them so many takes to record some of the stuff he did.
Oh, man.
I can't remember who was saying it. It might be Michael Caine who said it.
It's this weird mix of, like, you have Michael Caine playing with Ozzy Ardiles, playing with Bobby Moore, playing with Sly Stallone. Like, what's going on in this film? How is anyone greenlighting this? What year was it made?
It must have been early 70s, late 60s, right?
It released 1981 in July in the US.
That's later than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, Ozzy Ardiles is well retired by this point, surely. Oh no, he's still going. At this point, he's at Spurs.
That song's probably come out.
Yeah.
Ossie's indeed on his way to Wembley. His knees have gone all trembly.
Because he was on an escape to victory. Pelé,
at this point, the undisputed best player in the world, probably of all time. They gave him the rank of corporal as well, which is quite funny.
You reckon he counted the goals in escape to victory towards the 1,000 goals?
Oh,
total.
Please.
Against Sylvester Stallone as well.
Oh, it's goodness me.
The crux of the film is basically they have to play a match against the German team after they get caught trying to escape.
Yeah, they're all prisoners of war.
And it's so over the top where, like, the referee is obviously biased to the German team. All the allies' players are getting injured and all of this. And somehow, like, they celebrate a draw. And then they're like, "Oh, we've done it, lads." And they get smuggled out of the ground and escape. You're like, who thought up the plot of this movie?
But my favourite part of the escape is that in a lot of war films, when there's some kind of escape involved, it's like a grand plan and a massive escape. For escape to victory, they find some loose tiles in the changing room and pull their way out of the room. Like, it's the least grand escape of all time. Some dodgy tiling work in the bathroom.
I think what does it up for me is there's something about Stallone that I see him as a tracksuit wearing goalkeeper.
you know what?
Can you imagine he comes out for Rocky Balboa and he's got goalkeeping gloves on?
He's got trackies on.
What makes this weirder as well is that for a while people thought it was based on a true story. Like, it's now been discredited, but apparently there was a myth that a Ukrainian team played a bunch of German soldiers.
Come on, they had Andrei Shevchenko up front.
Yeah, apparently. And they won all of them. So the Germans were so furious that they shot them. And I'm like, this is an interesting...
They tried the dodgy German tiling in the bathroom.
Yeah. Like, you imagine seeing this event and going, like, this would be a great film to stick Sylvester Stallone in.
Wearing goalkeepers, mate.
The problem with football films, and I think Stallone probably sums it up, is that it's so difficult to capture realistic-looking scenes of people playing football.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it looks so robotic.
Yeah. I think football films have something, well, all sports films, is the best ones have very little of the actual sport in. So, like, the Damned United for football, Rush, the F1 film, very little racing in that, and it's probably the best F1 film they've made.
I would agree.
You can't show the sport itself in a good manner, so don't do it.
The way they were moving kind of looked like Pro Evolution Soccer on the PlayStation 1.
Like, they look like Hollywood actors trying to play football. You can't dress that up unless you get a full cast of footballers, but then they can't act.
You got Michael Caine and Roberto Lago playing in the same team.
To be honest, some of the Hollywood people can't act either, so what was the point?
Yeah. Roberto Lago on the wing.
Before we inevitably move on to Goal, which I think we can agree is probably the peak of all football films, I do want to talk about when they intersperse little moments of football in random films. And I think my favourite one is Trainspotting, where he goes to put the sex tape into the TV, and it's Archie Gemmell scoring for Scotland at the World Cup.
It's that kind of thing that you could see a football fan doing, is having this random collection of videos, being like, oh, love it.
Back in the day,
Not one sure about the videos I had with your sex tapes, but
one of the first videos I had was a 1999 to 2000 Premier League years.
Of course, it was
on a red tape because United won the there was a year after they won the treble, so they put it in. It was red. Cool.
Oh man,
I'll have to dig it out for you, mate. You'd love it.
Yeah, we'll stick it on. We'll do a watch along.
Yeah. I tell you what. When the FPL can have it.
Jesus.
You can wrap it in the Kevin Prince Boateng signed shirt. The
Hey, we're not giving away this shirt.
You are.
Absolutely not. Otherwise, you're going to kick everyone out of the league.
If you do, you win Andy Kaz of the year, mate.
Oh, no.
He's got me here because I didn't want it. Let's move on to Goal, because when the first Goal film came out, that was like, this is the best football film of all time.
Yeah.
And then it very quickly goes downhill because the rest of them are
Goal 2 was
so bad.
I didn't find the second that bad. The third is an atrocity to
if
film.
If Goal 2 had existed without Goal 1, you'd be like, yeah, pretty good film.
Yeah.
But the fact that it follows on and like it's such a step down, and then Goal 3 may as well not exist. They only made 2.
Goal 3 is shocking.
Is Goal 3 the one where it's based at the World Cup?
Yeah, and he breaks his ankle, and then the two English guys are playing in the World Cup, and one dies on a pitch because someone kicks.
I was going to say, I think I've only watched it once. Am I right in remembering somebody dies on the pitch in the film?
Yeah.
What the?
It's the BTEC Gavin Harris that dies on the pitch, and then it's some guy that looks like the lanky guy at the in-betweeners. It's him that's playing, obviously, a centre back.
Honestly, naturally. I'm not asked about Santiago Munoz. Gavin Harris, what an icon.
What an icon.
We should do a Mavericks episode on Gavin Harris. Absolutely a Maverick.
Yeah, Wooly, you know we were on about some of the best English striker performances we've seen in the Prem, Gavin Harris is definitely up there.
What an icon.
Tidy player. Harry Redknapp tried to sign him.
Terrific player. He's a terrific boy. Terrific lad.
He's got that awful trim that would have fit right in the noughties Premier League era as well.
100%.
Nico Kranjčar. He walks so Nico Kranjčar can run, mate.
Is the first goal film the best football film of all time?
Oh, it's She's the Man is right there, mate. What are you talking about?
Shaolin Soccer.
Oh, Shaolin Soccer is great.
Yeah, it's Shaolin Soccer is good.
I think goal's got to be up there. I think in terms of pure football, goal's probably the best football film.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
I don't know. It's definitely the most iconic.
That scene where he's eating the black pudding and he's like, what is this? And it's like, you're better if you don't know, lad. Like, that followed me for years.
There's a guy in my office called Santiago Munoz, and every time I see him, I'm like, fancy a kick about, mate. Yeah, I know.
He's got Gav's number, mate. Get him on the pod.
I'm going to get him on the manager from Newcastle. Do you want to move?
Wally, get him on the pod. We're having Santiago Munoz on the pod.
Yeah.
Come in live and direct.
We could replace Santiago Munoz and get him on.
We could easily get him on after his performance in goal 3.
Yeah, that's it. That killed his career. It deserves to die.
He's probably got cameo.
I wouldn't be surprised. I can't think of anything else I've ever seen him act in.
We'll get like a Bosch from Gavin Harris's actor. You'll love to see it.
Oh, fantastic. Oh,
that reel will go mad. Think of the impression
Gavin
there.
Harris just shouting, Bosch!
Oh, man.
Jesus Christ. I really enjoyed that. That was really enjoyable. That was
quite a bobble in his hand.
Wonderful trip down there. Down Hollywood Boulevard, not so much.
Oh, yes.
Hollywood Bowl.
The other kind Hollywood of football Bowl. TV show that I know we love, but it's kind of less common now. I think the most iconic one has died. Are those like accompaniment shows where it's not like a story or it's not like a game? It's like Soccer AM, for example.
Yeah.
Where it's just a bunch of football fans pissing about and Serge from Kasabian rifling one top bins.
Mate, yeah. Some of the clips that have come out of that car park, unbelievable.
In its heyday, Soccer AM was the most fun thing on TV.
You had showboat reels that always had a banging tune on them, and then they'd tubes go into the rap. Do you remember the women?
Yeah. Tubes doing the rap was always a highlight. Like you never quite knew what he was going to come out with.
Yeah. I do love playing away.
Iconic statement.
The other thing that I really... I think I've watched them about 4 or 5 times is the BBC Three shows where they do like the World Cup's 50 greatest moments.
Yeah.
And they do like the World Cup as a whole or like the 2010 World Cup. And they get a mixture of like footballers and comedians on and they just take the piss out of the whole thing.
Yeah, they are good.
Oh, yeah.
Has anyone watched the recent Netflix World Cup documentary?
No, I have not.
The one on the captains.
Is that what it's on? I think so.
There's one about the captains. There's also that really weird one at the moment, like Married to the Game.
Yeah.
The clips I've seen of
that. How have we not talked about this?
I was going to say, the clips I've seen of that, all the players look like bellends.
James Tarkovsky and his missus being asked, what is your favourite thing to do? Shagging.
This is the content that a designated journalist of the podcast should be researching for us.
100%. Jorginho looks like the worst guy to be in a relationship.
Jorginho
storms downstairs at the mere like possibility, the hint of a suggestion of marrying his missus.
He evaded the press brilliantly. That was wonderful.
The thing is, he went from South London where he had posh totty, and then he moved north, and now he's gone road. So he's got no respect for his missus now.
I think he is actually engaged to the same woman now. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, as well as some others.
So she finally stuck one on him. Two for her.
Yeah, she stuck with the Gegenpress for like 8 minutes. It finally paid off.
That Mahrez one is mad. That Mahrez one where she's like, you know, I'm gonna move out there, and you know, I've got no friends. You'll have all these friends in Saudi. You speak the language, whatever. I've got nothing out there. And he goes, yeah, game's a game. Game's a game.
But, game's you know what? Game. She's got a point, but also I deal with that for £1 billion a yep. week. So,
yeah. It is what it is. We live in a society. That's basically what he said.
Clips alone, I do not need to watch that documentary to tell you it is one of the greatest football documentaries of all time.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only other one I want to see, like a fly on the wall documentary for, is referees.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, yeah.
I want to hear, like, the debrief after the game. I want to know what's going on in their head. Yeah. Do they come off and they're like, yes, great job, lads. Absolutely smash that.
You know, Mike Dean saying that football isn't life or death and then cutting to him being a chicken slaughterer is the kind of TV I need.
Lovely. Well, shall we move on to the quiz, boys?
You know what? Go on then. I've been, all episode, in the back of my head, I've been thinking, I hope he's got a quiz. Because I didn't know
what quiz is going
to
be on.
I have got a quiz. Well, obviously, I like to theme on what we've talked about. Kind of difficult, but I think I've worked my way around it. We're doing Starting 11. And the link back to films and TV is that the Starting 11 features a prominent movie star.
Okay.
Because the game, and this is a tough one, is Wimbledon 1, Liverpool 0 from the 1988 FA Cup final. As always, players who started or came off the bench are correct answers, and unused subs are incorrect answers, and you have 3 lives each.
Then this is unbelievable, mate. You're joking.
No. Like, I genuinely think I've got one.
No, come on.
1998?
Yeah, the FA Cup final. Wimbledon 1, Liverpool 0. Good luck, enjoy.
You horrid man.
Ben, go on.
This is stupid.
Vinny
Jones is a correct answer.
Unironically, right, well,
that's my answer done for this quiz.
Has anyone watched the New Gentleman series with him in it?
It's been on my list.
Stop evading answering the quiz.
I'm going to go with Tony Yeboah.
Tony Yeboah is an incorrect answer. I'll give you some hints. There is a goalkeeper who has wobbly knees. There is a goalkeeper whose son was dog to also being a goalkeeper. There is a Match of the Day former analyst, one of the greatest analysts of all time on Match of the Day. There is the man who gets nailed by Vinnie Jones after about 5 minutes. There is a rapper. There is somebody else who features in the World in Motion film. There is a Scouser who played for Ireland and got very irate during the 1994 World Cup. There's a fat Danishman on the bench. There is somebody who presented Gladiators and shouted a Wooga. And there is also a quite well-known midfielder who played for Chelsea at some point in his career. And there's somebody on the bench who played for Real Madrid at one point.
Jesus.
Okay. It's me, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's absolutely Dave Besson in goal.
Dave Besson, first man to save a penalty in an FA Cup final, is a correct answer.
There's only one man whose son gets this much hate from Daniel.
Dad, the fat Dane on the bench. Is it Jan Molby?
Jan Molby was a substitute. He is a correct answer.
Oh, man. The Scouse Irishman has to be fucking John Aldridge.
John Aldridge.
Gotta be.
Because he's in that World Cup documentary where Ireland were just calling up anyone. And he's on the bench fuming in the most Scouse voice you've ever heard.
That is the angriest I've ever seen a man. Genuinely. John Aldridge is the correct answer. He started up front for Liverpool.
I will have Alan Hansen.
Alan Hansen. Correct answer.
Wobbly knees keeper.
Please say
is it Bruce Gobbelaar?
Bruce Gobbelaar. Correct answer.
I will go with the rapper and I'll go with John Barnes.
John Barnes.
Of course.
Is a correct answer.
Who was in this Wimbledon? Apart from Vinnie Jones. Is
he a former host of Gladiator?
Yes, he used to shout, Awooga!
Oh, man.
And it's not Chris Agabusi before you give that answer.
Is John Fashanu?
Yes.
Bash the Bash is up front. That is a correct answer.
Yes.
Right. I think the former Chelsea midfielder, I think, is Dennis Wise.
Dennis Wise is a correct answer.
Actually, I don't know. This has thrown me. This is not what I was expecting, man.
To be fair, we've had too many occasions where we've done starting 11 and you've got every player that stepped on the pitch. So it's about time.
I think it's the wrong era. Steve McManaman.
Steve McManaman.
Not a bad shout.
Is an incorrect answer.
No, was a bad shout. Ian Rush?
Ian Rush is an incorrect answer. Harry, you are down to a single life. You've still got the Wimbledon goal scorer who went on to manage teams including Fulham. You've got a Liverpool striker who is a name you will know, played quite a lot of times for England, was in the World in Motion video. I believe he was also in... do you remember on the New Year's Eve episode we talked about that horrifically racially stereotyped Liverpool fancy dress department?
Yeah, I could have done with that.
Yes.
Is it Peter Beardsley?
Peter Beardsley is a correct answer.
Nice.
Harry, a single life.
That's way before his time. He would have been like 16. I don't even think I have a name for you.
When Willie said Steve McManaman, he was awfully close. I'm just giving you the f***ing answer.
Is it Steve McMahon?
Steve McMahon!
Oh, what the f*** is this? You gave him the bloody answer!
There's something calling to me saying Steve McMahon.
He's just told you it's bloody right! This is...
There's something...
No, you know, Steve McMahon is a correct answer.
I do not have one for you. If you want to give me an answer as well, Dan, that'd be grand.
He basically did with Peter Beardsley.
I'd argue not to the same degree.
No, not quite to the same effect.
He gave you a name and then went, oh no, that's right. Fuck
one
me.
All right, Ben, here's your clue. One of the answers rhymes with Pori Danchez.
Oh, Laurie Sanchez.
Laurie Sanchez.
This is a farce, this.
Score the goal for Wimbledon is a correct answer.
You know what? As you said it, Wooly, I had a feeling that was wrong.
Harry, please give me an incorrect answer so we can end this.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with a current player for Wimbledon that is a name that I don't think we should forget yet. I saw his name the other day and he's on the books there. Jason Puncheon
is an incorrect answer. Ben, was
a substitute. I'll let you right off.
You know, Jamie Mackey's also there.
Oh man. What was the end of this quiz, man? So I got two, Harry you got two, Dad got two as well.
Yeah, nice. Everybody wins. The other players you could have had were Steve Nicol, Gary Gillespie, Gary Ablett, Ray Houghton, Nigel Spackman, which is a wonderful name.
That feels like a slur.
the other Liverpool substitute was Craig Johnson. The Wimbledon players you could have had Clive Goodyear, Eric Young, Andy Thorne, Terry Phelan, Alan Cork, John Scales, or Laurie Cunningham, who played for Real Madrid about 4 years before this.
Jesus.
That's crazy. Yeah.
There you go. Oh, and Terry Gibson. I've missed good old Terry Gibson.
Oh, big up Terry Gibbs.
Oh, well, man.
That was quite the end to what was quite an enjoyable episode.
Yeah, it was. I enjoyed that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Good going.
Wonderful. Also, for all the listeners, we will be now uploading on Thursday. We've got quite busy schedules, and Thursday suits us all a bit better in terms of editing and recording. So we'll be coming out on Thursdays from now on. That was another episode of the Streets Won't Forget podcast. Thank you very much for listening. If you did enjoy, please give us a 5-star rating on Spotify and a follow. It really helps us out. You can also follow us on social media. Our Twitter is at @SWF_pod, and our TikTok and Instagram is Streets Won't Forget podcast. And if you've got anything you want to tell us, your favourite football film and documentary, what answer would you have given in that truly awful quiz? You can email us. It is thestreetswontforgetpodcast@gmail.com. Boys, thank you very much for joining me.
Pleasure as always.
Have a good week, mate.
Oh! Was that pre-planned?
Ooh. The old switcheroo!
Oh, you never saw it coming.
You definitely never pre-planned that.
We've just bought play action to football, Willie. That's what we've done.
That's a reference that like three people are going to get listening to this.
Jesus Christ. We'll see you next week.
Gira can hit them. Did!
From David Villa, great finish.
He's done just that, he scored! Jorginho's done it!
Yakubu making another glimpse of goal here! That is terrific!
One, two, three, boom. John Cena,
John Cena!
I hope he's got some clothes on this time.